recording.
Okay. Hi, I'm Mark. I'm from the Riot Folk Collective. And we're going to play two rounds of two songs each. And then more stuff is going to happen. Stay put. Playing this song lately. It's kind of the storm happened. It's pretty fucking depressing, and the song kind of makes light of storms. But I'm gonna play it anyway, just with the disclaimer that I thought when I wrote this song, it was after the tsunami hit, and I thought that if a storm like that was to hit America, Bush would declare war on God. And that's like the whole premise of his song. But he's just maintained the war against the poor and the black. And should have been expecting that. So the song is less funny than
your
I thought
mother,
it used
your
to be.
Was right.
My mother was right?
Your
oh yeah, when I first sang the song for my parents, so I was staying with them when I wrote it. And I played it, and they just kind of looked at me the whole time. And afterwards, my dad says, "Bush wouldn't declare war on God." And my mom says, "It's sarcastic, Steve." Well, I was watching TV on Christmas Day. Said a big storm hit the USA, and the part of the country that I love the most is out there on the beautiful left coast. Kill thousands of is like an escalator, kills CEOs and jewelry traders. They call the tsunami the Terminator, cause it even killed Governor Schwarzenegger with a bad storm. I guess even a bad storm got a little bit of good. And then Bush came on the TV news, said, people, this is what we're gonna do. Get $400 for aid and support, $400 billion for a brand new war. Glad you asked me that, America. Is this gonna be a war against God? Cause God's a man who made the plan to throw the sea up on the land. He's been a terrorist since the days of old. It's not the streets of heaven, paved with gold. We could get us some of that, or we could liberate him from the angels. All the good people who died with Christ in their hearts. And I thought a war would be pretty fun, so I put down my guitar, picked up a gun. I went down to the airport with everyone. We're gonna fly up past the sun and get God.
Gonna get him good.
Hope my wings don't burn off.
Okay.
And our airplanes race through outer space, looking for God. Ugly face, he says he's wrinkly old, and he's got a big beard. Looks a little bit Jewish and a lot of it Arab. It's 100% un-American. Search for God through the whole solar system, but he's a sly dog, we always just miss him. And wars don't always go the way that you plan it. We didn't find heaven, but we found a new planet with intelligent life on it. Bomb the fucking shit out of them. Don't feel bad, they're illegal aliens. If you don't like what this country does, you can just leave it. If someone tells you God said don't believe it, cause we're gonna win this war. Your flag to support your troops. You fucking dupes.
such a wealth of feeling. Fills me up with energy, I'd always be healing. If not for such a pitiful mess, I've got such shitty tools. And I don't even know how to read. But I'm devoted to some phantom structure that some phantom family never taught me.
Our lyrics and all this other info and stuff. It's a pretty bad website right now. I'm sorry. yeah. So this is self-explanatory.
The war is over.
That's what they say.
They're making sure the media presents it all that way. You see, from the war in Vietnam, that you will never let people see what's really going on, since say they blundered. They call it a mistake as if they'd thrown a bottle down and didn't think that it would break. They didn't fail. There was no contest. They planned a colonizing conquer and they made a complete success. So while the victim's family search for answers in the dust, there's recruiters in the high school building up trust. It's the story that you've heard so many. Suicide, their proof thy glory. Embracing patriotic myth. Now there's 1,800 dead troops who started out like this. One more. To be buried by your friends, politicians who use any means to achieve their ends. That's their job. But if you backtrack just a few years back, you'll see they plan to take Iraq before the terrorist attack. And they were jumping on 911. Perfect chance to implement the plans that they had drawn plain face. They swiftly led us in the war. They used the victim's name to justify 100,000 more. It's economic. It's a long-term scheme. They've learned for years and years of practice how to get away clean. And there they go. And the weapons weren't found. What's no surprise to me, now the Iraqis have no water, but at least their market's free. And look, they voted. All the profit politicians were delighted here at home with this scam. Another Trojan horse, an election organized by the occupying force. How's that progress? They voted for their chains. Just look at Afghanistan. They did to them the same. And the soldiers coming home, they're trying to look ahead. Having been to war and back, they see the faces of the dead. They can't erase them. No, it's etched too deep. Now they're already diagnosed with PTSD, here are the heroes. No longer standing proud, awaiting refuge from the shelters, asking pennies from the crowd, they trust the politics. Now they're seeing what's in store, once the victors, now the victim for the same exact war, just like before. What happened? Well, it's not that hard to see. It's a broken record war, repeating history, the
2017. No war is ever won. We keep forgetting these things that think we won't learn. So the stories keep repeating, and the tables never turn. We sit by watching while the tragedies unfold, and that's the problem. We're afraid to take control, but we could.
Thanks, y'all. This is a song me and Mark wrote. I need to get a drink of water. It's a rewritten Woody Guthrie song. Oh, actually, wait. Maybe we won't do this one. You're not. It's still a rewritten Woody Guthrie song. It's a different one. This is a brief history of government. Has anyone ever heard the song "The Biggest Thing That Man Has Ever Done" by Woody Guthrie? Okay. It's I rewrote it because I thought a couple of his lines were just like the one about setting the country free. Yeah, right. And he said it was me and a couple of Indians who dumped the Boston Tea, but it was just people dressed in calico outfits. I'm going to sing a song next time I get up about another group of white people who dressed in calico outfits. But it was in a, I don't know if it was in a respectful manner necessarily, because I haven't read enough about it, but it's for a good purpose. But anyways, that's a different song. I hoarded all the fruits and all the vegetables and grains. I kept them for myself, but made a price that you could pay. And from this early pattern, the structure did become. The only thing the governments have done. I hired you to work for me so you could buy my food. Created an economy that barely gave a clue. Then you did all the labor, but I got all the funds. And that's about the only thing the governments have done. I built a giant fortress where my family could reside. I filled your workers up with myths and patriotic pride. I filled my life with luxury and politics and fun. And that's about the only thing the governments have done. I sent the children off to school to be taught and trained in the roles of benefit and keep the system maintained. I kept them from their history and slowly made them dumb. And that's about the only thing the government's done. I launched many wars in the name of private greed. I killed off all the natives from the mountains to the sea. I murdered them with slavery and smallpox and guns. And that's about the only thing the government's have done. I built with brick a place for those who wouldn't play my game. Fight my wars for me or papers to my name. I build a giant prison wall so people couldn't run. And that's about the only thing the government's done. I gave some of your backs of freedom with my silly bill of rights. I used all the proper language so you wouldn't rise to fight. I fooled you all with imagery, now look what I've become. And that's about the only thing the government's have done. Yes, I fought long and hard to secure my place on top. The bombs and tanks and crack cocaine and violence from the cops. I kept you apathetic and this is how I've won.
Give you everything you need.
Listen closely, it's also about a point in history right now.
Smoke is coming. Smoke is coming from the trains running past the grave of our family. Another winter, folks are afraid. Local kids spit on our shoes. A rootless cosmopolitan came up. A rootless cosmopolitan came up. Through the cracks of dirty Warsaw sidewalk. He knew all about those cries. Wall, and of course, the papers were awful.
our ghetto, and we never thought they wouldn't, but the point is we all rose up, and everybody thought we could. And all you've got in this world is your life, your love, your dignity, so what you gonna do? Someone takes away all three, and I don't have a name.
Mom. fucking high school. We still have fun.
Quite decide what I'm going to play. I'm going to do a poem, but with this. Three or two.
And they can make it up to nothing.
Never mind.
Three.
Gomez songs. All the songs but the Warsaw one are rewritten. Tonight you saw me rip off Bob Dylan, Lucinda Williams, Woody Guthrie. That's what we do with folk songs.
Fakes, phony. Alright, this is. Whatever, we wrote it to explain it.
Talk
about
Scotland.
It's not that really.
No. Well, the world has seven nations, or maybe you've been told, that have most of the money and therefore run the globe. The richest of them all is almost anything it wants. One of its current stands is called Pueblo Panama. Took a notion in the year of 44 from their history, combining corporate dominance and war. They formed the World Bank and they formed the IMF. This new colonialism would be called development. Well, the World Bank had a child and they named it IDB, and it rambles through the hemisphere creating poverty. It funded much destruction, forced the people into debt. Now when Pueblo Panama shows that they aren't done quite yet. Starts in Pueblo, Mexico, and travels south from there, building highways and railroads and sweatshops everywhere. Upward soon to Michigan and into Canada, it's a trade route for the gringos, where Pueblo, Panama. They're cutting down the forest, dumping poison in the sea, and they're damming up the rivers, making all the people flee. They're blowing up the mountains, digging craters down for gold, and they're talking about democracy while slaves are being sold. Now from Juarez, now from Alta, you can hear the rattling chains, making t-shirt boys and sneakers for export to the States. The farmers can grow coffee, cotton, flowers, and cocaine, protected by the death squad, straight at the SOA. It's a foggy mountain paradise, or on the sunny beach. Labor and free markets are always within reach. Like a giant arm outstretching, keeping everybody down. It's a plan of the Panama, it's happening right now. The world has seven nations, and maybe you've been told, to have most of the money and therefore run the globe. Their prosperity was gained through trickery and blood, like their latest scam for profit, plan of the Panama.
I'm glad you're back, because this song's about Albany.
Yay! New York or Oregon?
New York.
Where's New York?
I'm from the East Coast. I would have said Albany, Oregon, if I was talking about it. Well, hey, when I'm...
A song about Portland, Maine.
Yeah, I was just going to say... People always say Portland, Maine, and then say Portland when they're talking about here. So you got that going for you. This is like the smallest font that I could have possibly. But I remember most of it, so you can, if I, you know, just be on a
point.
Red alert, code red. Just talking about how like the hurricane and all of this shit that's gone on has kind of, as Mark said, it's like an existential crisis, and everything kind of I'm like been playing a few shows before this, and I'm kind of like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, why am I doing this? Like, why am I singing about all these things that like aren't really, you know, the urgent issue right now to really be paying attention to, and. Not that I'm going to stop singing about them, because they're just as urgent, and people are dying all over the place for all these different things, and it's all linked to a fairly common theme of capitalism and ecological destruction and stuff. But so I was thinking while listening to Mark's song about the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, how just like how good it is for people like us to hear stories about, you know, maybe our history or other people's history or whatever you affiliate with, really, that brings you up, that lets you know that even out of the most hopeless situations, hope can come, and people can at least try to do something and, you know, die on their feet, or in some cases win a struggle, you know, even in the craziest conditions. And so this is a ballad that I wrote that I took from A People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn. And it's about Albany, New York, or when it was back when we were born, in the 1830s, when it was called Rensselaer Wick. And you'll hear all about it. But it's a story of uprising from our past. At least my past, I don't know. I'm not going to speak for everybody. But I was always like, I don't know, I always thought I was just this like, I mean, I am this white mutt, you know, from a suburb, and I'm just like, I don't have a history, and, you know, like, yeah, my ancestors are Scottish, but, like, I'm not Scottish, and, you know, I just went to Scotland, I didn't feel any, there was no, like, you know, spark that hit me, like, oh, my fuck, I'm Scottish. I realized it, you know, and I'm not. I grew up in this country, and can its conditions and all the things that, you know, so it's kind of out of this thing, there's a lot of, like, especially anarchists that I know that, that affiliate with some other country's background because they don't want to affiliate with being an American. But then it's like you're still repping a country either way. Like, I'm not American, I'm Irish. And you're like, okay, what's your point? Like, and after reading like some U.S. history, I'm actually kind of proud of some of the things that have happened here and the resistance that people have put up. And so I started writing songs like this. And it's very similar to some things that are happening now in Chiapas, Mexico, and Oaxaca, and a bunch of other places. So. In the Hudson River Valley on the Rensselaer Estate, a sheriff seeking rent pay was warned what he might find, and there were tin horns blowing from the hillside. What the shrieking of the horns meant, the sheriff wasn't sure, but he was met with opposition that was stronger than before, as farmers dressed in calico came pouring out the woods. The tenants that assembled and stopped him where he stood. He presented them with writs demanding back rent pay. They seized the writs and burned them and sent him on his way. For so long they had suffered, but now they organized, and there were tin horns blowing from the hillside. Now this was not the first time the tensions rose like this. Back in 1750 and again in 66, they fought against patroonship, against the landlord's rule, and this time they were ready for a battle. Mass meetings of the tenants led to organized dissent. That same December they came again collecting rent. What the sheriff and his posse of 500 didn't know was there were 2,400 in Calico. They were armed with clubs and pitchforks, assembled and arranged. They sent the sheriff and his soldiers back the way they came. They said the revolution was once again alive, and there were tin horns blowing through the hillside. The landlord on the stores, the timber on the houses too. Put yourself in the picture and think what you would do. He taxed you for your labor and he taxed you for your land. The farmer in the valley was his servant. He was free to ride his horse and drink his wine and gather wealth. So far from the misery he'd never know himself. Over 80,000 people were impoverished by his greed while he was filling his life up with luxury. Calico was chosen as a costume for the plan, paying tribute to the natives who'd been driven from this land. They agreed to take their power back, assembled by the cry of tin horns blowing through the hillside. In county after county, the movement spread and grew, till over 10,000 were prepared to see it through. They tarred and feathered deputies. crushed by a common theme in U.S. history, and probably all of history, I think.
By 1825, it was clear it wouldn't last. They introduced petitions, but of course they didn't pass. After a farmer killed a deputy, the troops were ordered in. Nearly 100 tenants were imprisoned. We tried a few with murder, sentenced two more to be hanged. Forced two to write letters urging others to disband. It wasn't long before the politicians slithered in. Reduced the sentences to life in prison.
The next governor elected pardoned those still locked away. Passed some laws and made some speeches, but kept things much the same. They maintained domination of the many by the few. And some aspects were abolished and the owner class. Crushed them with their law. But if you listen closely, you can hear the tin horns call. They can build the strongest shackles, but one day they will crack. And as history repeats, people learn from the past. Yes, there's a warning in the story for the tyrants of today. From Philly to Chiapas to Immokalee. When the water starts to boil, then the pot will overflow. It won't long
listening to us and waiting so long to for these folks to finish meeting. I'm sure it was like a very urgent, important meeting, and I have no problem waiting for it, because that's work. It's good work. So what I started my thought before I introduced that song and didn't finish it like I usually do, what I meant to say is that in times like these when everything is so fucked up, or maybe I did say this, I don't know. Anyways, it's helpful to hear, like, uplifting stories. It calms you down, it makes you remember that you're part of a long process that's always changing. Big things can happen in short periods of time and stuff. So this is gonna be my last song for now. I think we're gonna get up later if people still wanna hear songs and play more. So this is called If I Had a Rocket Launcher. I'd like for you to sing along if you want to. And it's kind of like a tribute to the Bruce Coburn song of the same title, if anyone's ever heard that. Bruce Coburn song rocks, and it's got the same message, the exact same message, basically, of people responding to oppression with raw force. And But his is like really 80s out, and it's got bass, like, it's really like boom, boom, you know, keyboards and all these things that I don't have. My parents always said I should have been born in the 80s. No, actually, I was born in the 80s. They said I should have been born in the 60s. Anyways, my friend was locked up for 6 months. It's horrible. I just got a call from another friend of mine who used to hang out around Baltimore, and he was just in jail for a year in Texas. And he said, he's a white dude, he said in Texas, or maybe it's a lot of other places too, he was on a cocaine charge for a year. And he said that there's a like huge group of Nazis in the prison there, and he talked to this Mexican dude one day, and then they stabbed him. They stabbed like my friend in the stomach with a piece of fiberglass because he wasn't just hanging out with the Nazis. So the Nazis basically force people to hang out with them by stabbing them if they don't, and they like they kind of run the social scene. So all of these things and that and like this it all kind of goes into this song. And like well, my friend was locked up for 6 months for armed robbery, didn't rob anyone, had no weapon. It was really obvious when he went to trial after 6 months. That's how long it takes to process him and everyone in Baltimore at least. And they, you know, looked at the evidence, which was nothing, and they let him go and stuff. But I visited him a few times, and I was in there, and I talked to, like,
family members and people who have friends and lovers and stuff in the prison. And it was just a really interesting experience that I had never really gone through. Just thought about so much and learned about how, like, people make 10 cents an hour in the prison, like, carting water around, or, like, there's toxic mold. The building's, like, 200 years old in Baltimore, and there's toxic mold that grows on the ceilings of the cells. So when people complain about it too much, they'll just hire a few inmates to paint over it. There's no laundry. People do their laundry in the toilets and stuff, or they have to have somebody come and pick it up, which, like, most people don't have somebody coming and visiting them that often. Because a lot of people, like, just don't have that kind of time. It's, like, really odd hours. It's, like, Thursday mornings at 10 in the morning when you can come and visit. And so, like, anybody who has like, a regular job isn't able to do that ever. So all these things that were just going on. And it also goes with, like, there's kind of... about a year before this happened, before my friend was locked up, and in Maryland there was a Nigerian immigrant, 54 years old, who was in prison, black dude. He was in prison for 3 years for some sort of, I think it was drug charge, actually. And so they said he assaulted a prison guard, just like simple assault. So they added 20 years to his sentence. So he had a 23-year sentence for a drug charge and for, you know, assault, which could be like grab my hand. That's assault on an officer if they want to get you. So they were going to take him to a psychological evaluation, and they went into a cell. And this is in Western Maryland, which is like a, you know, pretty damn white and pretty, like, notoriously racist area. And they went to a cell, and he refused to go. At least they said he refused to go to a psychological evaluation, so they could determine that he was insane for, like, being upset about spending 23 years in jail for nothing. And they used 3 bottles of pepper spray on him, and then they handcuffed him. After they handcuffed him to a wheelchair, and then they put a bag on his head, and he died. He died of asphyxiation. And then they also were, like, kneeling on his chest and beating him and stuff. And he was shackled and stuff when he died. And then they didn't declare him dead in the prison. They called an ambulance, and the ambulance came. They treated him like he was alive, so he was declared dead in the ambulance. So he didn't die in the prison. So the investigation was, like, a lot less, and it gave them the legal right to clean up the entire area so that no investigation could take place with any actual evidence that was there. And that was just coming out in the papers a lot. When about a week after my friend got out of prison, this is just recently, I've been talking to these 3 guys who had just gotten out of prison, they're all, like, sharing the same kind of, like, if I had a rocket launcher, that kind of feeling, you know, like, I want to blow up their cars, I want to find where they live, you know, like, all the guards are criminals, so, you know, I want to do this and that, just crazy shit. And I'm sitting there, like, and just kind of sketched out by the whole situation, but it was the rawest emotion, and they didn't give a shit, you know. A lot of people just lost everything. And then about a week later, 25 guards in that same prison beat this guy to death, this black dude, 51 years old, with 4 kids, who was in for theft, because he talked back to them. So they beat him to death, and then 3 of them are now in prison in the county, which is, like, the white part, and it's for their safety that they're in county prison. And county prison's, like, the nice place to be in prison in Baltimore. And I think maybe 3 others were fired or something like that. They were all, like, on paid vacation right after it happened. And a union I used to support, AFSCME, also, you know, is the prison guards union. And this union official is on the news being like, oh, you don't understand how hard their job is. They're under a lot of stress. You know, like, you can't take this out on them. And I was so frustrated. So I wrote this song about it. And that's, And it's kind of comparing it also to people in Iraq and their emotions and, like, you know, just that feeling. Kind of what's in the news right now with people in New Orleans and the soldiers and the cops all, like, we don't know why they're shooting at us. I know why they're shooting at you. You kill them all the time. It's New Orleans. You know, it's like, it's one of the poorest cities in the country. Poorest major cities. 70% black. You know? Really corrupt police department. Really notorious for that. You know? Tourist base. You know? Baltimore to Baghdad, a worldwide war. Of destruction, it's a double-bladed sword. It's a contract with the billions in the streets. We protest with the slaughter, getting slaughtered by police. We wrote a law of our neighbors and stab them in the back.
crooked game of power. With a check that's always back and forth, and struggle through your labor just to find your place in line. With profiteers and keep a path holding down the line and make the foreground so destructive. Look what's happening behind. If I had a rocket launcher. Slogan after slogan, repeating the refrain. We trust these movie stars and media, fetishizing famous little tidbits of reality. Go flashing across the screen, they say that everything is even. I'll follow in the plan, the banners stacking piles, being bulldozed in the sand. There's nothing different about it. It's just like all the rest. It's children without parents, homeless, cancer, and vets. They try to cloak it all in logos. Each day another myth. The news reporters smile, painting stories from the depth of what they did with Southeast Asia. They're doing here today, and if I had a rocket launcher. If I had a rocket launcher, if I had a rocket launcher, I would make some people pay.
Just like Mark said in his song earlier, I don't like violence. I think violence is scary. I've never been in a fight, and I don't really want to be in a fight. I don't like getting beaten by the cops. I don't like hitting people. But obviously, this point where it's absolutely necessary. We shouldn't glorify the violence of it, but we should glorify the struggle and what's behind it, you know? So this song seems to glorify the violence, and I don't think rocket launchers have actually ever solved anything, but I think there's a degree of justice in it that we have to look at instead.
Down in central booking, in the overcrowded cells, the poor house together, fending for themselves against the prison guards union, the criminals with these, on punishment, correction, doing anything they please, locked away inside this concrete cage, all hope is torn apart. Circle is unbroken, and the cells are always full. You know the war across the ocean. Well, here's the one at home. From the ghetto to the graveyard, the path is set in stone. The duty done by prisons is maintaining poverty. And if I had a rocket launcher, 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 I'd abolish slavery. Still, each day a new beginning finds you staring up the hill. Another war, another clear plan, another killer cop. A society collapsing, the ticking of the clock. And think there'd never be an outlet, never something so immense could break the spell of silence and the deeds it represents. But between the benefactors and the people beaten back, it's evident by history that something's gonna crack. And when it does, there's only action. The changing of the hands, aggression laying waste to all the best laid plans. And go blame me.
For listening to me and others.
So this show, I guess, is a benefit for hurricane victims. And I'm going to New Orleans tomorrow. I used to live there, and I'm going back now to bring a bunch of aid along with a caravan that's going down there. And I think a lot of the songs that people are singing are really relevant to what's happening down there. You might say, well, what's the connection? Because this did not have to happen. And the reason that it happened is because of capitalism and because of this government. And there's a lot of information about that. And the reason is the wetlands have been eroded for the last 50 years. New Orleans as a city has been sinking because the Mississippi River with the levees around it has been acting as a chute, taking away all of their wetlands. And the and so the wetlands, as they're being eroded, have not been able to be built back up. And meanwhile, the city is sinking. Along with that, you combine global warming and the climate destabilization. And in addition to the last few years, the just complete removal of funds for upholding these levees. If you don't know, the reason that there was such huge flooding in New Orleans particularly is because the levees broke, the levees that were holding up the waters of Lake Pontchartrain. And the reason the levees broke is because the budget has been cut ever since Bush took office, and they had to finish a levee project that cost $20 million, and Bush denied the funding for that. That was in 2004. So it's a long-term and short-term being caused by the government and by these forces. And then the governmental response, I think it's really appropriate that that Brian saying that this is about the only thing that government's ever done. The only thing the government's done in this situation is to bring in brute force and start shooting people. The only people who have been helping and saving people have been the people who live there and the people who have come in to help. And meanwhile, the government has been shutting off aid. They had a Navy boat sitting outside of the harbor with 1,000 beds, with all kinds of equipment, and they were waiting for President Bush to give them the go-ahead after that hurricane hit. And not only that, 500 boats coming in from Lafayette, Louisiana, to help rescue people, volunteer boaters, were pushed out by the National Guard. So the government is hindering the relief efforts. Bush, at the same time that this Navy boat was sitting there, all they needed was a word from the president saying, okay, go ahead, go on in. This is on Monday, the day the hurricane hit. They knew that this boat was there, ready to help. Bush, where was he? Sunday. On his ranch, Crawford, Texas, Monday, okay, the day the hurricane hit. They knew this was going to hit, okay? They knew it was the big one, that New Orleans was going to get hit by the big one, which has always been predicted. You know, they knew that this was going to happen. So so then Bush went on vacation. Then he went to California to act as a salesman for the pharmaceutical companies, selling high-priced drugs, ignoring that this was happening. Then Tuesday, he was playing guitar in San Diego. Nothing wrong with playing guitar.
He plays guitar?
You know. It was a photo op. I don't know if he actually played, but I'm sure that the Riot folk singers would do it better.
Riot collective members.
But then he rushed back to Crawford to keep going with his vacation. On Wednesday, finally flew back to D.C. Didn't stop in the region, went back to D.C., and issued a statement that the New York Times called the worst speech of his life. Now, for Bush, that's saying a lot. He said, basically, I'm depending on my dad to take care of the relief effort. And that's as far as he went with relief, you know. And meanwhile, you know, there's people on their roofs, people drowning as he spoke. This has been 3 days now, 4 days, nothing. The fifth day, he finally went there. And you know, brought troops. Instead of helping people, they're bringing military down there. So lots of people are helping in other ways, grassroots ways. The government also says, okay, don't give your money and your support to grassroots organizations or to anybody except for our official charities. You want to know what their official charities are? The Red Cross. The Red Cross, which took fully 80% of the aid money that was given after September 11th and all good consciousness, people were giving their money, 80% they kept. Okay, so most of that money never went to the victims. And second on the list on the FEMA website to give money to, you want to know who it is? Pat Robertson. Pat Robertson's organization, Operation Blessing. And Pat Robertson, by the way, who just called for the assassination of democratically elected Hugo Chavez of Venezuela, Pat Robertson, who said that feminism is a socialist anti-family political movement that encourages women to leave their husbands, kill their children, practice witchcraft, and become lesbians. Pat Robertson, who owns a mining company that's currently mining diamonds in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where 3 million people have died. Okay, over the last few years in the war there. And he's mining diamonds there. And there's a pretty good chance, if you look at those tax records and you really follow that money, that the money that goes from Operation Blessing is going to support his operation in the Democratic Republic of Congo. So for the government, for, you know, I've been really surprised at people saying, oh, you know, I don't know if I should go, I don't know should help. Maybe I should just give money to the Red Cross. Don't do what your government says. Like, they're fucking this up. Like, we're the only people who have been affected are the people who have gone out and done it themselves. So that's what we're doing, and hopefully more people will. So here's the picture. Help what you can, and I just feel like it's like, I don't know, today in, I think it was the Oregonian, they're saying, oh, there's going to be some refugees coming. Well, the refugees may or may not come. You know, they probably won't. But the people in that neighborhood were at a community meeting last night saying, we think this is going to ruin our property values if they come here. I mean,
yes, there is. So I'm Saint Abby and the Neverending Cockroaches of Doom.
Woo!
And the reason why I'm Saint Abby and the Neverending Cockroaches of Doom is because one time my friend Angel, who is an interesting character, who used to be Puerto Rican, and he used to lead land takeovers down there, and then he moved up to this country and was a heroin addict for 10 years, and now he's a born again Christian. But he told me that he prays for me every day so I can be a saint. And the Neverending Cockroaches of Doom is because of this song that I'm about to play.
Woo!
Because it's about cockroaches. The age of the cockroach, the time of the sword has come. It's time to crawl out of the gutters and take your place in the sun. After the fallout is settled, we'll still be around. After the fallout is settled, we'll come crawling out. A new generation's begun. It's time to crawl out of the gutters and take your place in the sun. The age of the cities is over, decay of the wreckage begun. The buildings and concrete are crumbling under the light of the dying sun. Trees of the forest that withered, the rivers are running with fire. The presidents down in their bunkers, 6 miles underground, are cold as ice. This is the age of the cockroach, the new generation's begun. It's time to crawl out of the gutters and take your place in the sun. After the fallout is settled, we'll still be around. After the
CD that we're coming out with right now. It's a live CD, and I think we're gonna rotate songs right now too.
Hi, my name is Koseth.
Woo!
These are the Owakos back here. They're essentially my ego, and I have nothing relevant to tell you or to sing to you about. So this is absolutely non-relevant, and this is absolutely not rock. Just in case you were confused that we might be rocking right now, we're not rocking.
We're not gonna rock.
This is a song about Blue Heron beer from the Portland Brew Company. That's your corporate sponsorship for tonight, just in case you missed it. I am the corporate sponsorship. Welcome, 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 all of you. And this is about beer, and this beer really inspires me. So therefore, I'm going to sing about it. Thank you. back again to the Abbey and the Cockroaches of Doom hour. About 3 minutes
about
and a half.
About 3 minutes, yeah, usually.
You all can clap
also
along if you know the song.
Chords,
clap!
Ooh.
Is it working? It's working.
It works! So I also have a brief hurricane-related announcement, although it looks like it might not be relevant anymore because there might not be people coming to Portland, but a group of us were talking about how we should try and get bikes donated and fix them up to give to the people that are going to be in town here, because if they do come, they'll probably be here for a while. So we got a list started on that table over there, and if you have spare bikes or bike mechanic skills or small parts for bikes or, like, other useful commodities and skills, you should sign up on there. And then if they do show up, we'll be prepared. But in the meantime, this is a new song that I wrote recently. It's kind of, about how sometimes, like, people are shitting on you from the top and shitting on you from below, too, at the same time. And baby's been crying the whole night through. She won't shut up and I can't sleep and there's nothing I can do. And early in the morning they come knocking at my door, saying thanks for that check you sent, but you still owe us more. My mama always told me that I could change the world. It's the same story her mom told to her. It's the same story that their parents bought, and I bought it too, and look what I got. A bureaucrat sitting on top of my head, the hustlers are biting my feet, and all that I want is to hold my head high when I walk down the street. Behind the counter, the men, they bother me. The crazies come in packs and they talk incessantly. The junkies stole my spoons to go stick needles in their arms. I know them and they know me, and we know what each other's weak spots are. My mama always told me that I could change the world. It's the same story her mama told to her.
Disaster. Yay! Jesus Christ. Okay. This is a completely opposite of what she just played about, which is about junkies and when things go to shit and some experiences we had here at the lovely Back Cafe. But this song is about having a crush on a trucker. And I had a big crush on a trucker and we went on dates to do this truck stuff. It was kind of romantic until he disappeared.
I got a big dumb crush, my heart.
Trucker once, and we would go to Juba's and eat chicken fried steak. Okay, no pics.
No, the bus at the time was really bad. Actually, I had a salad. He had chicken fried steak.
Don't lie.
Don't lie. Don't lie. I'm a liar. I admit.
Do you guys want to hear another song about the apocalypse or a love song?
Apocalypse.
Love is good.
I have some of those, but they're different.
They're different.
Apocalypse or love?
Love.
The apocalypse.
They're torn.
Okay, it's the apocalypse. Next one will be love.
A song about making out now. So we've gone through beer and crushes, and this will be making out. This is two chords, I should remember it.
I just want somebody.
tasting fresh breath.
He was
guitar strap thing. Confusing. Okay. This is a song about, I don't know. Does anybody have any requests that I know? No, not that good. I admit it.
More songs about making out.
This is a song about throwing things at me. So if you have things, you can throw them. If I can remember how to play it. Frustrated with the day job, night job, whatever it was. But you can't tell. It's a secret. They're all secrets. Why am I telling you my secrets?
Shh. Now I'll play a love song. This was like the second song I ever wrote, and it was about this girl I used to work with when I was 17, and I had a big crush on her, and she had a crush on me, but she had a girlfriend, and it never went farther than that. And I always kind of wish that I would have said fuck morals. And just, well, you know. But that's all. But I didn't.
You meet her when you're 40, she'll still be hot, actually. I'll be like, woo!
I don't know, she was kind of a drunk then. She might not be hot by when she's 40. I mean, I guess I was kind of a drunk then, too. Anyway. Thank you.
song about a date to the sushi place Takahashi. You guys might have been there. Where I embarrassingly derailed the sushi train single-handedly and made an absolute fool of myself. And it was really lovely because I was trying to impress this girl. And I was like, woo, this girl! And then we're talking politics. We're talking, like, recent news in the newspaper. And then went for the sushi, hit the plate, hit the train, derailed, like, most of the train. There was, like, sushi everywhere. And I was like, the cat going, oh, my God, I'm going to die! Oh, my God, I'm going to die! Okay. It was like that. And needless to say, I don't think we went up. No, we didn't go out on another day. That was the end of it. Don't derail the sushi train. You don't impress girls that way. It's also about a bunch of nonsense, but you guys probably caught that already. St. Abby.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Should we play songs together soon?
I don't know. We can play songs together.
You want to play my song and I'll try and play your song?
Yeah. Maybe we could, or I don't know.
Yeah, you play my song and I'll play your song.
Okay.
Okay, you can show me how to play your song if I forget. This is bad. You have to sing like an opera singer.
Microphone. Oh,
wait,
shit.
I will use a pick for this one. But I also need to adjust the strap.
I have broken microphone. I can sing an opera singer.